Earlier this week, a British Army court-martial released 22 photographs of Iraqi prisoners, and in some cases, their British captors in Basra. The pictures had been taken by a soldier based there. They showed Iraqis being abused. Two men were stripped naked and evidently forced to simulate sex acts. In other pictures, grinning soldiers threatened cowering prisoners with kicks and blows. In one, a prisoner was seen tied up and suspended from a forklift. One striking thing about these pictures, which were evidently taken before the American Abu Ghraib photos came to light, is how similar they are to the Abu Ghraib images, a theme of prison pornography full of sadism and sexual humiliation was common to both. Neil Ferguson is a professor of history at Harvard who has written about Iraq and also about prisoner taking and prisoner killing in the world wars. Welcome to the program, Professor Ferguson.
It's a pleasure to be here, Robert.
Let's set aside any possible conspiratorial explanation of these two sets of pictures, what they have in common. Assume that there was no common rogue interrogator suggesting similar abusive tactics. What, if anything, do you see of human nature emerging in these pictures?
Well, I think anybody who's worked as much as I have on 20th century European history has naturally a rather low opinion of human nature, particularly in combat zones. There's no question that one could imagine similar photographs being taken, though, of course, cameras were much less easily available in certain theatres of World War I, or indeed of the Balkan Wars that preceded them. Atrocities against prisoners were not dreamt up by the occupiers of Iraq in 2003-04. So there's a kind of general point about human nature to be noticed here. The other point that's really crucial is, though, that in modern times, sustained efforts were made to develop and implement laws of war that would ensure that prisoners were well treated. And there's a tremendously good reason for this, which Winston Churchill commented on during World War II. And the reason is that if you treat the enemy's prisoners well, then your own prisoners will be treated well in turn. So we really neglect these laws. We neglect the laws that protect prisoners at our own peril.
The laws of war, of course, in this case, are being upheld to the extent that there is a court-martial underway in Britain, or at least at a British base in Germany, and there also have been court-martials in the United States growing out of Abu Ghraib. But the notion that Churchill expressed assumes a certain gentlemanly, equal regard among soldiers, the notion that I'm a soldier, I've taken prisoners, you're a soldier, my prisoner, you might have taken me prisoner. That same mutual regard doesn't seem present in the theaters you've alluded to.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's an important point to bear in mind about Iraq, and that is that it has a lot more in common with the kind of colonial conflicts that the British Army found itself involved in Afghanistan in the 19th century, right the way through to Kenya at the time of the Mau Mau. These are very asymmetric conflicts where a highly organized Western army finds itself up against a relatively informal and diffuse guerrilla force. One could also look at the experience the French had in Algeria in the period of decolonization when the French Empire broke up. And these are conflicts which, precisely because of their asymmetrical nature, can create frustrations on the part of the occupying or imperial power. And the most obvious frustration is the difficulty of eliciting intelligence about a shadowy, elusive enemy. And I think the key point that was lost sight of, though it's not quite clear at what level of command this happened, what was lost sight of was that whatever benefits you gain in terms of intelligence from torturing and abusing prisoners are very likely to be expunged, completely wiped out, in fact, by the damage you do to your own reputation internationally and, of course, in the country that you're trying to govern.
To what extent does this practice of taking humiliating photographs strike you as something novel, or is there some clandestine, secret, illicit archive of pictures of past wars in which one sees soldiers abusing their prisoners?
Well, there certainly are such pictures in the case of World War II, though the parallel is not one that will please British or indeed American listeners. The German army was always very permissive about its soldiers carrying cameras in comparison with the British army, which actually prohibited the use of cameras by troops, say, in the First World War. So we have an awful lot of pictures taken by German troops in both World Wars of what might be called unofficial mistreatment and also official mistreatment of prisoners. So there's nothing really especially new about pictures of humiliated or indeed brutally murdered and tortured prisoners. This goes back a long way.
Is there something unique to our times about the the pornographic aspect of some of these pictures, making two men strip naked and appear to be engaged in a sex act.
Well, it's tempting to say that this is a sign of the times and that in the good old days nobody would have thought of such a thing. But I must admit I'd be sceptical of that. After all, the mistreatment of prisoners sexually occurred in the concentration camps. The sort of people who run prison camps, when they are given more or less unlimited power over disarmed and helpless captors, are likely, in at least a few cases, if not in all cases, certainly not in all cases, but in a few cases, to be tempted to perpetrate all kinds of ghastly, sadistic acts.
Professor Ferguson, thank you very much for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
Harvard historian Neil Ferguson, who is the author most recently of Colossus, The Price of America's Empire.